from Hospice UK and Dying Matters, this is the Dying Matters podcast. I'm your host, Eleanor McConnell. If you're listening to this, then you probably already know that we've just finished Dying Matters Week. Our theme this year was, what can you do in your community? And it's a question we asked to challenge you to think about ways you can help the people around you to feel more comfortable talking about death and dying. During Dying Matters Week, events took place in communities up and down the country with that goal in mind, helping people of any background to connect and talk about something that, after all, will affect all of us in some way. Every event was different, ranging from a death cafe one evening to full-blown week-long festivals. This week, we're talking to the organisers of one of those festivals, Pushing Up Daisies in Todmorden, West Yorkshire. Pushing Up Daisies is organised by three women, Sue Robinson, Hannah Merriman and Mary Clear. They are all practising death doulas, lay experts committed to accompanying those coming to the end of life and their families. But these ladies thought that they could do more. I asked them why they felt it was so important for them to reach out to more people. Oh, and a quick note, Hannah's baby Orla was also keen to join in the conversation and makes a few contributions of her own in this episode. So now, over to Pushing Up Daisies.
I think it was as a result of us thinking when we were on our doula training with Living Well, Dying Well, we thought, what can we do that's not about monetizing the role of the doula and have a really big impact in our town? So we thought we would do something about conversations and people and community as opposed to concentrating on individuals. Is that about right?
Yeah, somebody else asked me this recently and I was saying, well, the three of us were doulaing together and having on this training course and having a fantastic time learning loads of really helpful things about how to be around somebody at the end of life, how to support them, what the different needs might be. And we thought, well, Mary's point was, hang on a minute, we're spending our time and money to gain this knowledge, but it's not specialist knowledge. It's knowledge that used to be part of the community that everyone had up to about 40, 50 years ago. So what can we do to go back to our community and spread that as much as possible so that that gets out to people? So that re-democratisation of the knowledge that used to be in every parlour and living room, you know.
To share, because it is extremely expensive and not just expensive, the training, but to get there and a huge commitment. And we just thought, wow, if ordinary Joes, if many more people had the knowledge we had, it would make things easier at the end.
Well, and the doula role's about companionship, so this was taking companionship to the bigger scale of companionship.
I think there was also, for me, or for all of us maybe, there was something about, we found it really exciting and invigorating to have frank and open conversations about what hurts, what does it look like, what does it smell like, what comes out of what orifice, you know, just actually getting into what is this thing that we're all going to do? And that fascination that we all had from different angles, we thought, we can't be the only ones. Unless we're just weird, actually, let's get this out there. So it came from asking our community, does anyone else actually want to talk about death and dying, or is it just us? Mm. And our community came forward and said, no, we do too, you know, and that was it.
When did the idea of a festival first come to you?
Well, we were on the doula training and we sat down together and said, gosh, there's something in this, you know, there really is. It can't be that we have these conversations and go back to our lives and they don't spread any further. And just the idea of a festival came up. Mary and I have both had quite a lot of experience of organising community events, and Sue's experience in nursing's community. So it was like, well, you just have to get out there, you know, you can't sit in a room and think about this stuff to the nth degree. You have to get out there. So we came back and it was in March, and none of us had thought I had Dying Matters Week, of course. Mm-hmm. Sue had. So we said, well, let's give ourselves the target of Dying Matters Week to go for a festival. And so we literally made some posters, put them around town saying, who wants to come to an open meeting? We're going to do a festival about death and dying. And 22 people showed up on a sunny Sunday morning, you know, in March.
We just went for it, I think.
Yeah.
And how did people react?
A mixture. I mean, some, as Hannah and Mary have said, have been enthused by the idea of a space just to talk about it without inhibition. Others have been a bit grossed out about it, which you sort of expect. Why on earth would you do a festival about death, dying and bereavement? But I'd say generally much more receptive than we might have imagined, or certainly the initial group of people that have been involved.
Well, I think that the proof of the pudding is, when we did that first one, I thought it was a one-off, and here we are 4 years mm-hmm. later with people clamouring to come forward and contribute. So, you know, that's... And people, the word... pushing up daisies, but you know, people in the street, oh, is it soon time for pushing up daisies?
Brilliant. And I would say in that first year we were really anxious about going to people and saying we're doing this festival about death and dying, and there was a sort of, we're going to do a festival about death and dying. Like, for me personally, I would mumble it a bit and just keep smiling and hope it would all go okay, because we were looking for cafes who would let us use their space. And what I didn't realise, you know, the theory is everybody dies. Everybody knows somebody who's going to die. Everybody knows somebody who has died. But then when you have to take it out to the community, you wobble a bit, I think. But when I went in all those cafes and said, could we use your space? Of course, cafe owners have parents who've died, or kids who've died, or dogs who've died. And actually, it really is real that everybody gets it. And on the last day of the festival in the first year, Mary opened her front door, and there was a woman who works in a bakery who dropped off two huge trays full of beautifully handmade
cupcakes
with daisies on, and just with a tear in her eye said, thank you for everything you're doing, and left. She didn't come to any event, but she did what she does, which is bake cakes and say thank you for the effort that we were putting in for the town. And I think that's a real indication of how people do respond to it.
So what's the community of Todmorden like?
Oh, I'll do that for you. 15,000 people with a very diverse community. So we've got a mosque, we've got a small mosque, we've got a Polish community, we've got low employment, we've got higher than average long-term sickness, and we've got houses that are 1 million, 2.5 million on the top of the hills, and in the bottom of the valley, houses for 60,000. So it's very diverse in terms of wealth, ability. We've got a long history of nonconformism. So we're a border town, and border towns often feel a bit chippy and a bit humpy because they're a long way from anywhere. So it's a diverse, creative, well, it's heaven.
And the irony is that Todmorden is German for death, murder, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
So it was destined to happen.
Destined, absolutely. Death, murder in German. You can't make it up. It's perfect.
Is there anything specific to the community of Todmorden in the Pushing Up Daisies Festival? Like, how much do you tailor it to the community you know?
Well, the door, we like to keep the door open for everyone. So we're, from day one, we're listening to silence. We're checking ourselves. How much involvement with children? We need to do more for children. Oh, we never had the imam. Well, we need to do him next year. So we're looking to get as broad as possible. We don't just want the PLUs, the people like us. We're not concerned about that. We're interested in getting the message right out there. But I would say there's nothing that we do or will do that can't be done anywhere else.
It's a model that can be transferred.
Mm. Mm.
Mm. Well, you used the word, Eleanor, you used the word, how much do we tailor it to the community? Because we don't tailor it, it's perfectly fitting to the company's community, because we say, here's a festival. We've got about 2.5 grand or something like that to cover biscuits, teas, coffees and room hire and getting the leaflets produced. everything else in the festival needs to come from you, dear community. So if you want a workshop, then you put it on. None of us get paid. You're not going to get paid. If you're lucky, you might get travel expenses, but we can't say definitely to everybody. So we don't sit round and work out what we think our community needs. We sit round and go, right, how do we get enough money, and how do we craft what our community brings forward as the raw material into a festival that's beautifully created, but the ingredients come from the community. So that's where we can sleep easy, and we don't spend our time worrying about if we're making the right decisions, because our community is making the decisions for themselves.
Well, and the analogy we used when we were invited to the Dying Matters conference after we got the Initiative of the Year award was the banks of a river. So we are Pud Central, and we create the banks of the river, and the conversations and the trickle or the stream or the river is what the community produce in the riverbanks, and we don't know how that river will bend or become straight or large or small, but we're just there to hold it.
What kind of events happen at the Death Festival? What does it look like?
Our library's our hub. So in the hallway of the library, we've a full-size coffin turned into bookshelves, and the library stocks all the books on death, counselling, loss for children, little children's books at the bottom. You can post a letter to the dead in the library. You can read poetry from local poets in the library that's been written. So that's right in the heart of the town, a very well used library.
And you talk about tailoring, actually. There's something about, as you said, Mary, each year we're adapting. So the programme this year, for example, we've got less on in the mornings and trying to have more on in the evenings so that we can try and capture a different audience perhaps from last year when it was more daytime focused. So but there are events for older people, children.
So we start on Saturday the 12th, and we've just got one big event on the first Saturday, which we call the Arty Farty Starty Party, and that's the kind of opening celebratory bash to, like, let's begin this festival. And in that, there'll be my 12-year-old neighbour singing the song that she wrote when her granddad dies. There's some improv. There's a local band who travel around the country who are quite in at the moment. On Sunday, the big event in the evening will be something called Prostate and Poetry. So a local poet who has a terminal diagnosis at the moment is doing a night of music, poetry, and then his urologist is coming along to answer any questions that people might have. On Monday, we've got Tea with the Undertaker. We've got a local author talking about a book that she wrote in response to Facebook and how people use Facebook around grieving, that she's calling social grieving. On Tuesday, we've got a talk called It's Not Holby City. So that's a short talk about resuscitation. What is it? When do we need it? When don't we need it? What to do if we don't want to be resuscitated? There is a play, a two-hour one-woman play that will be on based on the development of a piece of work that happened at the Arty Farty last year. So she spent a year working on it, and it's now a full play around how she accompanied her mother as her mother was dying. There's stuff for Alzheimer's, there's dementia awareness training. We've got our local high schooler doing an evening of poetry, songs and performance around death and dying, so the kids are getting involved. Thursday, there's a show called No Kidding by a theatre company in York who've asked to come to our festival, and that's all around ageing without children. So what is this issue? There's a whole population of older people who don't have children who are going to be there to look after them. What does that look like? What are the alternative social models that might come out of a desire to have those conversations? Hamsters, the Hamster's Gone to Sleep is another workshop that we had last year that's come back, which is a local children's hospice, are coming in to support parents and teachers on how to use language around children and death. So, you know, it's really varied.
And are those events ones that you come up with or ones that the community suggest?
Every single one that the community's come up with, yeah.
It gathers shape in the open meetings, because that's when people come with their ideas, and they might meet someone else then that will work with them on a particular event, and two people might get together and do something. And lots of ideas crop up and don't happen, but that's a conversation in itself.
So if you think about any community, it'll have artists, it'll have poets, it'll have painters and creative people and show-offs and posers. All of those people are all what you want. You've just got to shape it into something beautiful. So on Saturday, you know, because we've so little money, we have to look at what space we can use. We're going to be outside on the towpath of the canal, and because the lady who's the manager of the pub is from Thailand, yes, she is. And so she'll bring some Buddhist monks. They make a beautiful temple outside, and they have some feasting, and the monks chant all day long about releasing,
letting it go.
And then we just buy some tiny little leaf boats, and so children can have workshops putting little memories in the boats, and then the monks float them on the water. So it's a case of always looking at what can we, we've got something, what can we add to it? Who can add to it? And when you've got no money, it's really exciting, because that's when you come up with really exciting things to do.
And many of the events have become repeated events, haven't they? Because people have valued the opportunity or enjoyed the opportunity, and so they roll on into the next festival.
Do you think it's helped the community in any way?
And that's the challenge, is the evaluation, isn't it? Because you can count how many people attend an event, but you don't know what the impact of that event attendance has been or will be on conversations that unravel beyond the event. So we've done sort of mini evaluations of counting up conversations, and we've just said it's thousands of conversations in the festival week, and we're assuming thousands of conversations during the ensuing year.
And I'm pretty confident of this, that we're well on the way to becoming a compassionate community. Because if someone were to approach us now as Pud Central and say, Mrs. So-and-so in this street, she's elderly, she wants to live at home until the end, but there's a daughter 50 miles away, what could be done? We have so many people on our database and our contacts. There's a new app as well for organising, visiting and dealing with people at the end of life. We could quite easily get 20 volunteers very easily to manage that process. So we know there are people out there now who would buddy up and friend people. We know that would happen.
And we have people calling us saying, I'm really struggling at the moment because my husband's going through chemo and it's pretty lonely, you know. And we have those conversations with people throughout the year. And also people we don't know. So that's, you know, Sue says the challenge is how do you measure what you don't know is happening? But, you know, on Facebook, people who we have no connection with have contacted us saying, well, my friend just died and we don't know what to do with her cat. You know, can you help us? So that sense that people have is like, yes, oh, this thing in our town exists around death and dying, and hopefully I don't need to go near it, but when the chips are down, I will actually contact them for a bit of help. And that's, there's something in that, you know, something in that.
Well, and Mary, you mentioned about compassionate community, because in a way we have interpreted the theory without knowing about the theory. So it feels like others may come to community engagement with a set of ideas or theories or a model, whereas actually this is about just doing it, getting on with it, doing something. And then actually when you look at the theory or the models of compassionate communities, you know, we can think, well, that's interesting, you know, things are going on in the schools. In a way that hasn't been contrived, it's actually evolved.
And do you think that nationwide we've kind of lost the sense that we live in a compassionate community?
Well, I personally feel really strongly that it's something we completely lost, because it's perfectly okay to see videos of ISIS decapitating people, shooting people, but to talk openly about death and dying is still seen by some people as a taboo subject. That it is really the last taboo is death. And I think the middle classes, the Guardian readers, have got it nailed. They're well onto it. But I think there's a huge amount of people out there who don't know what to expect in hospital, don't know about advanced directives, don't know what power they've got, and who would look on perhaps pushing up daisies as a step too far. So I think we do need to reclaim death as a natural, normal process of life. I feel very strongly.
And that links with not over-relying on professionals,
yes,
to set absolutely the agenda or manage the journey, but actually it's about citizens and ordinary people managing or taking on that.
Yeah, and you've given plenty of examples that there are ways the community can look after itself. We don't necessarily need to wait for the government or any kind of authority to step in.
Well, I think we can do aspects of it ourselves, because I think the danger is we're not saying, you know, we don't need health professionals or specialist palliative care teams or social services. You know, absolutely, that's part of the infrastructure. But it's working alongside the community rather than the word that comes to me is rather taking over, but working alongside, which then goes back to the doula role, doesn't it, actually, which is working alongside.
I'm really fascinated in what's happened in the last, say, 70 years. And one of the big changes to the process of death and dying is, firstly, women are emancipated and go to work. So there aren't all those women at home that would be able to sit with Auntie Joan and Uncle Fred and nurse them and cook for them and be there. And the second thing is the housing crisis in this country is not because there are tens of thousands more people. It's because we don't live in family units like we used to. So hundreds of thousands of people live alone, and loneliness is such a key issue. Less children are being born. There are less family units. So all of that mashup has created all this kind of toxic situation, and with a global recession and the NHS hanging on by a thread, if citizens don't step in to readdress some of this, that's the only hope there is to take the strain off of the system.
Another element as well, which is alongside that or totally separate from that, but not at all contrary, which is I genuinely think that the three of us felt a little bit naughty doing Pushing Up Daisies the first time. It felt a bit radical.
Yes. Yes.
It felt edgy. It felt exciting. Like the slightly naughty, rebellious inner girls in us were having an absolute field. Because each and every person in this country has swallowed and absorbed the rule out there in the air, which is you're not supposed to talk about death. And we sort of sat up one day and said, bloody hell, who made that rule up? Do we agree? No, we don't. Can we get told off for this? We don't know. But there's something in the air that says you will get told off by a big grown-up if you have this conversation. And the sense that, are we actually allowed to do this, still comes to me 4 years on.
Yes, absolutely. If we stepped over a line, you know, what is that line? Tell me, how far can I go, can't I go? I was at a funeral yesterday, and there were three people at the funeral who are very, very seriously ill. And I really wanted to say, how's it going? You know, I wanted to say, are you living till you die? I wanted to say millions of things to them. But I thought, no, Mary, we've got to obey the rules today. We're at a funeral. You know, the rules are really kicking in at a funeral. I mustn't ask them how long have they got and whose funeral will be next. I'll have to be quiet on this one. So, yeah, we're still not sure.
Well, and there's something about the three of us you touched on. We bring different features, don't we, to Hood Central. And we've frequently said that's part of its success from our point of view, is that we're different personalities, different life experiences, but somehow that is what makes it work. So Mary, you've got a background in social work, you and Hannah, you have in counselling and I have in nursing, so there's sort of a bit of a marriage.
So yeah, we've not done, I think a lot of people fall into the trap of, let's apply for some funding, let's get some star. They look at all what we can't do. Oh, we've not got an office, we've not got funding, we've not got anyone allocated in the team to do this job. And they stop themselves before they even start. Mm-hmm. For sure. And spend a lot of money on balloons in shopping centres. Mm-hmm. So I think to have much more fun, and that's what we're really mm-hmm. good at. So we're fueled by cake. The whole week will be fueled by food. Mm. Definitely.
And not led by an evaluation.
Yeah.
Which is touches on you saying about paid workers and agendas and funds. Mm. That, you know, people say to us, well, you know, not many people come to some of the events. Well, that's okay, because there were conversations when the event was put together on the way to the event. I mean, we've had somebody from the library who had the whole bus talking about shroud making, do you remember, in the first year, and the bus driver joining in. So, you know, it's those sorts of conversations that are the ones of value.
So what are your top tips for anyone who wants to do what you've done?
Cake,
yes.
Cake.
You know, the old thing.
Tea and cake.
Tea and sympathy. Tea, coffee, cake, a place to sit down. And look at your own community. Just see the rich. So everyone's going to have a funeral director, some doctors, some nurses, some teachers, some poets. That everybody's got something. And I think social media is really good as well. Facebook, to use. We've got Facebook, whether we like it or not, and it really does work brilliantly well. Definitely.
My top tip would be don't be afraid of how people will respond. That's the biggest thing. For me, in the year one, that totally opened up the door for me, because I was afraid how people would respond. And I'm a counsellor, and I can pretty much, I don't think there are many conversations I haven't had. But I was cacking it the first time I went out there in public. And the public want to talk about death and dying. So don't be frightened about not stepping on toes. People want it. Not everybody, but lots of people. And I really think that's worth remembering.
Well, I think for me, it's finding someone else to do it with you. I imagine it's quite a sort of challenge. I mean, you were talking to somebody, weren't you, from a hospice that was trying to go out on her own to sort of engage with the community. But somehow, if you can be brazen in a little team.
Yeah, you need a little team.
That gives you some support.
Yeah, I mean, I've said, I don't know how much you two would agree, but I don't think Pushing Up Daisies could happen if the three of us weren't together, certainly in the first 3 years, because that diversity of someone's mad, someone's a detail freak, somebody else is bossy, you know, somebody's structural, somebody's systematic, somebody's a yes person. You know, it's totally chaos. It's chaotic, and it's not comfortable a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. But I think sacrificing comfort for something that happens that's alive is worth it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And have you got any favourite memories from festivals or past events?
For me, the fiery feast, when we burn the letters to the dead and a trumpeter plays the last post, is so fabulous. And last year, one of our daisies died. 2 weeks.
Yeah.
After the festival.
She was involved with the first three festivals, yeah, wasn't she?
And it was fabulous. She died really well. Mm. And she had a great time. She had her last dance, didn't she, at the festival. Mm. And then she took to her bed and died. Yeah.
And you mentioned daisies, Mary. That's another... We've got three roles in the festival. So one is a daisy. So these are people in the community who wear a daisy badge for the week. And they're saying by wearing the badge that they're happy to be approached by anybody to talk about death, dying and bereavement. So they're not in a counselling role, but just I'm a citizen in the town and I'm happy to talk. Another role is a mucker inner. So they're people who help stack chairs, put up the bunting, clear away the plates, and then obviously the event facilitators. That's the third role. I love Waterside Wonders, which is beside the canal, which Mary's already referenced, which is with the Buddhist monks and releasing the memory boats and children painting skulls. And you had ginger dead men, didn't you, last
year? Yeah.
And we had a Frida Kahlo dress-up and face painting and clog dancing and music. That just felt so community. And the other thing is that the first year we actually, well, the first couple of years, we were up in the church, weren't we, on the hill. So although we were saying we're prepared to have conversations, we didn't quite go down the hill into the town. Whereas the last year and this year, we're actually in the town hall. So we've emerged from the church and said, actually, we feel more able to have the conversations now, actually in the centre of the town. So that's brilliant. That's partly why the Waterside Wonders is really appealing to me, because it's out in the open, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
I think I have there's loads that I can talk about, but one that jumps out from last year is at the Arty Farty Starty Party. So that's the one event that I host. And last year I was 6 months pregnant, and the Daisy, who's a woman whose name is Bardi, was there, and the music came in. So the big band came in at the end of the night, at the end of the evening. And throughout the session, that my two neighbours, my neighbour and her two daughters were there. And it is family friendly, but it's pretty edgy as well. You know, it's quite adult, you know, the event. And the younger of the two was 10 years old, and it was her birthday. And her mum said, "What do you want to do for your birthday?" And she said, "I want to go to the Arty Farty party as part of Pushing Up Daisies Week." So we had an unborn child, a 10-year-old, some close friends of ours who do the music, who are absolutely fantastic, and a woman in her 60s who was 2 weeks off death, dancing to 90s rave music in a community hall, and the sun shining through. And I thought, if we're not a compassionate community, then what are we? Mm. You know. Mm. So it touches. You know, we're bringing this stuff out of the dark for children who are not even born yet, and I think that's the value of our work. Mm.
At Dying Matters, we are so grateful to all the people like Sue, Mary and Hannah who make this Awareness Week such a special one to be a part of. They're people who see talking about death not as an onerous job or something to tick off a to-do list, but as an opportunity to forge real and lasting bonds that can bind a community together. At least 450 events have been held across the country, and we're so pleased that this movement is continuing to grow. Thank you so much to our guests this week, Sue, Hannah and Mary. You can find out more about what Pushing Up Daisies have been doing this year at www.pushingupdaisies.org. Special thanks to Bernadette Ryan for our theme music. Dying Matters is a part of Hospice UK, the national charity for hospice and palliative care. If you enjoyed our podcast, make sure you rate and review us in the iTunes store so that we can reach even more people and get everyone talking. This is the last podcast of our series. Thank you so much for listening. We hope that you enjoyed hearing from all of our amazing guests and have been inspired to start having some of those conversations for yourself and your loved ones. Hopefully, they've shown that it can be a really positive and even enjoyable experience. Keep in touch with us as we continue to work to help people talk more openly about dying, death and bereavement, and to make plans for the end of life. We're on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram at Dying Matters.